Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair, solidly and firmly up in the captain's chair and wearing one of my Cutterman shirts today. Because one of the things that we're going to talk about today is the relief of the Commandant, Admiral Fagan, and the accession to command of the Coast Guard by the former Vice Commandant. And we're going to talk about that, but we're going to talk about it in an orderly progression. Because it pleases me to do this in such a way as to settle everybody down. When something like this happens, then there is a tendency for there to be great flurries of activity. And it is my job to assure all hands that all will be well. Because it will. So we're going to start off today with greetings from the captain's chair to all of Captain Joe's people who came from someplace else. And I do this today because there are several people who I deal with directly who helped to take care of me as I work my way through this most recent adventure. And either they or their families came from someplace else. In one case, from Syria. In another case, from Vietnam. And they are working with me to either make the island better or to make me better. So we're going to talk about that a little bit farther on. The binnacle list today is one of hope and improvement, in the sense that I have no reports to make of people who have crossed the bar. And in my own case, quickly, briefly, tomorrow I make a voyage to Pacific Medical Center, and we're going to try to pull Mr. Foley and see whether I can make deposits into other than the day tank. We're going to give that a try tomorrow. I know that most of you who are Captain Joe's people who are also members of the Coast Guard family want to know what I have to say, what I think, and what I feel about the relief of the Commandant, Admiral Fagan. And so here is that commentary. She was relieved effective midnight today, and the All Coast, the message that goes out to all Coast Guard people, All Coast number 021 /25, had the title Leadership Notification to the Coast Guard Workforce. There's that hated word, workforce. I am not a member of the workforce. I am a proud Cutterman, many times over. I have commanded Coast Guard cutters. I've commanded a large shore command. I am not a workforce person. But that's how that message went out. And it sent a signal from the acting Secretary of Homeland Security, a person by the name of Huffman, because the secretary has not yet been confirmed. And it just had a few lines, and it said that effective today, I have relieved Admiral Fagan as the commandant, and according to the law, the vice commandant now steps up as the acting commandant. I looked at Admiral Lunday's biography, always hopeful that the now acting commandant would be either a cutterman or a wearer of wings of gold, in other words, an aviator, a brown shoe. I was doomed to disappointment. And although he was wearing the Command at Sea insignia on the left-hand side of his uniform, it turns out that his Command at Sea was when he was a lieutenant junior grade and he was the captain of an 82-foot patrol boat. After that, no further commands at sea, no further operational commands. He is, in fact, a Coast Guard lawyer. He is a Juris Doctor. And I hold only the highest regard for Coast Guard lawyers because one of my closest friends in the Coast Guard is himself not only a brother Coast Guard icebreaker captain, but he is also a Juris Doctor. But it turns out that Admiral Lunday is also a cybersecurity expert. And his command at shore was of the Coast Guard Cybersecurity Command, whatever the hell that is. It is my hope that when a commandant is appointed by the commander-in-chief, which he has not only every right, but he has every responsibility to do, that it will be either a cutterman or a wearer, a brown shoe, a wearer of wings of gold. And that it will be someone with considerable operational experience. I have no quarrel with the idea that the secretary or the acting secretary has every right to relieve anyone in the Coast Guard. That is part of the tradition that goes back to 1790, goes back even before that, where we established in our Constitution the idea that the military should in fact be under the jurisdiction of the civilian leadership. In other words, the commander-in-chief. What I would have hoped is that Admiral Fagan would have been given the opportunity to step down graciously. And that would be in honor of the long history of the Coast Guard. Goes back to 1790. When it was called the Revenue Cutter Service, and of the long and honorable service to our nation, which the service has provided. But that's not the way it was done, and so it is to each of us to go forward, not spend a great deal of time looking aft into the wake at all of the brash ice that's back there, but to post lookouts as far forward in the eyes of the ship as practicable and as possible to be on the lookout for dangers ahead. If I were in command right now, here is how I would handle this particular situation and how I have handled it in the past. It was my custom to always deliver important news or, in particular, bad news to my crews, and I would ask XO to let me take quarters. Every day in all of my commands, there was quarters for muster. And for the chance to talk to my crew, I would ask XO to have everybody mustered and then ask XO to have them fall out and gather around me. And I would then tell them what it was that I had to say. This establishes in the hearts and minds and souls of the people that I was privileged to command the idea that their captain was watching out for them. And I would always deliver as my final remark, my traditional saying, that this particular command will carry out all of the missions to which we have been assigned, and I will take care of those who have been given to me to carry out those missions. And those two points are of equal importance. They both must happen at exactly the same time and with equal importance and gravity. I tried to do that in all of my commands. I think in most part I was successful. And so that is the way that I would be dealing with it today. In fact, I'd carry it even one step further, and I would, if I were, for example, if I were a group or what we now call a sector commander, I would be going out to all of my unit commanders. When I was the commander in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, I think I had 25, 26 smaller units that reported to me. And I would be sending a signal out to each one of those commanding officers and officers in charge that I was headed in their direction, and I was going to hold a full-dress personnel inspection, and after that personnel inspection, we would have fallout and gather around the commander, around Captain Joe. And at that time, I would hold both a very strict personnel inspection, and then we would gather around and I would talk about the significance of the relief of the commandant and the significance of my being there to talk to them. That each one of them was important and precious to me, and that each one of their families was important and precious to me, and they all remain Captain Joe's people. This is a very personal style of command and leadership. It is the one that worked for me and the one that I describe today. I make no judgment on the whys of Admiral Fagan's relief, and I make no judgments on the politics of our civilian leadership. What I do know, because I practice it every day, that I was privileged to be in command of a cutter or a group, was that it was my job to make sure two things: that every mission continued to be carried out, and that every person that I was privileged to command was in, as I put it now, in the palm of my hand. And I say the same thing today. So that's what I have to say about that for now. It remains to be seen what is going to happen in the service that I have loved and served since I was 17 and continue to do so today. And so the symbol of all of this for me, when I woke up this morning, I was approached by Blossom and Sailor for breakfast. And by the time we got through the breakfast ceremonies, and there are ceremonies that are associated with this, as you may well imagine, I looked out over my deck, and I could see Mount Rainier in all of her glory this morning. And at the top was a lenticular cloud. Now, lenticular clouds form up only on the top of mountains. They're called lenticular clouds because they're shaped like the lens in our eyes. And the one this morning was particularly large and beautiful. I take this as a metaphor for the service that I have loved and served since I was 17. A lenticular cloud on top of our service. The chain of command remains intact. The people who make it up, I hope and expect and require and command that each of them be also commanded with every sense of skill and integrity that we can bring to bear. I do take on board the executive order, which was signed yesterday, which changes the name of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. And I make the point here that it is called America because the German cartographer Milton Martin Waldenmuller in 1507 called it that because the Italian explorer Amerigo Vespucci, an Italian, was being recognized by Martin, who labeled part of the world he envisioned as having been explored by Vespucci, Amerigo Vespucci, America. And then the geographer Mercator extended the name America to all of the Western Hemisphere. We still use the Mercator projection. If you use a nautical chart today, unless it is one that uses what's called a polyconic projection, as for example in Antarctica, that the projection that is used to translate the sphere of the Earth onto a flat piece of paper is called the Mercator projection. And we still use them today. And we still call America, America, because of the Italian explorer, Amerigo Vespucci. So far as I'm concerned, it remains the Gulf of Mexico. And when I go into order charts for the Gulf of Mexico, that's what I'll be looking for. I find that to be a particularly interesting change and one which I choose not to observe myself. A couple of public service announcements. That's it, public service announcements. I had talked a couple of weeks ago or maybe last week about my friend Cindy Hoyt and the book that she has written. She's having a book signing at 4 o'clock on the 26th of January, which is Sunday, and it is going to be held in the ever-vegetarian Snapdragon. I will be there. I will be buying a copy of the book, and I will be asking Cindy to sign it. If you live on the magical Isle of Vashon, come and join us on Sunday the 26th and get Cindy to sign a copy of her book for you. The second public service announcement is that Mr. Yuck of the Pacific Poison Center, the Washington Poison Center, on whose board I sit, is having a big poster contest. And if you live in the state of Washington, you hear my voice, and you have a grandchild or child who is anywhere between kindergarten and the 12th grade, you are eligible to submit a poster. And you get further details by going on to the Washington Poison Center website. I don't need to give you the address. Just type in Washington Poison Center into any search engine and it will bring it up for you. Somehow or other, the inaugural parade yesterday got moved inside. And so my commentary on that is this. I have marched in two inaugural parades myself. The first one was when I was a cadet at St. John's College High School in Washington, D.C., which every year, every inaugural parade, except maybe this one, always has the Corps of Cadets marching in that parade. Because it is a very junior unit in terms of both size and seniority in parade terms, it always marches in the last division and usually marches after, if it is a Republican president, after the elephants, which means that there is a considerable amount of dodging around the detritus that elephants leave behind. And I remember this very clearly. Marching in a parade that included elephants. And elephants leave a lot behind as they go along, and you have to kind of march around them. That was my first parade. And then my second one was in the Eisenhower administration, when I was a cadet at the Coast Guard Academy. And we were loaded into trains and taken from New London, Connecticut, down to the Potomac Yards in Washington, D.C. Potomac Yards as rail yards, I think, no longer exist. Now I think that they are all kinds of gentrified area. But in those years, the trains all went to Potomac Yards, and that's where we marched from Potomac Yards to the parade site. The year that we marched in the parade for President Eisenhower, when I was a cadet at the academy, it was really, really cold, and I think it was easily as cold as what we had yesterday. It does seem to me that those people who march in the parades are people who should be able to manage that pretty well. But that was not to be, and I don't know, I haven't looked at any film clips. I don't know exactly how they did it. I will say that they should have marched, and they should have marched outside, and they should have marched in front of the commander-in-chief standing right by the White House. That's the way it should be done. That's what I have to say about that. The families that I'm talking about and the people that I'm talking about who have been taking care of your captain came from someplace else. Tomorrow, when we try to see whether I can manage without Mr. Foley, I will be taken care of by my friend and one of Captain Joe's people, Vivian. Vivian is about 4 feet, 6 inches tall. She weighs about 95 pounds. She is Vietnamese. And her parents came, of course, from Vietnam. Vivian is kind. She is incredibly gentle. And she is very skilled. I trust her completely. And she stands so that when we get to the hard part of both taking out the old tube and, if necessary, putting in a new one, and we've had to do that twice with Vivian, she stands so that I can put my hand on her arm. The last time that we did it, there was a rough point, and I think that my pressure on her arm, I left the mark, which is probably still there. But she is so good and so gentle, and whenever she says, "Captain Joe, we're almost there. We're at the hard part now." And I get to put my hand on her arm and squeeze down hard. My other Vietnamese friend is my retinal surgeon. There was a time some years ago where I almost lost the sight of one eye and came close to losing the sight of the other. And I was saved by a retinal surgeon who came from the Ukraine. And when she went into, I called her my Russian tractor driver surgeon. And when she went into private practice, I was handed off to her replacement, who was and is a Vietnamese ancestry. He's never been to Vietnam himself. He was born in this country, but his parents came out of Saigon at the fall of Saigon in 1972, 73, whenever that was. He was born here in America. He has never been to Vietnam, doesn't have any intention of ever going to Vietnam. But he is here because his parents came here after the fall of Saigon. Another example of a family that has been given refuge in this country, and now my retinal surgeon takes care of me. A wonderful, wonderful person. My last one is a Syrian family that has an incredibly awful story. And how they got here is beyond the scope of what I have time for right now. It is enough to say that they have settled in this country. They make an incredible contribution to island life. They are people that come and work with me and for me when we do the low tide celebration. They bring their food cart out there. They bring their truck out. And they are the great example, a great example of the benefits that we get when we have people come from other countries and stay, settle, and stay with us. So those are my examples of people that are people that came from someplace else. They help take care of me. They are, in fact, Captain Joe's people. We are once again and all too quickly at the end of our time together today. And if you have any comments about what I've said, you choose to disagree with that, I welcome that. And I do not dodge away from any of those comments or remarks. But know that all of you who are on as far to the left or as far to the right or wherever you are in your political spectrum, that you remain always, if you are Captain Joe's people, you remain in the palm of my hand. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. We'll meet again right here on this particular place at this time next week. And with that, I will say, as I always do, this is your Captain Joe I am on station and watching properly, and next week I'll give you the report of how Vivian and I do tomorrow. I am counting on great things happening. All of you take care. Watch each other's six. We'll be together again next week.